confession time. This is something I'm going to say that is probably not going to be popular with a lot of people. And I know this might make some of you kind of angry, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Confession. I actually kind of like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, come on. You know, if I had known you were going to say that at the opener, I may have reconsidered this show.
You know, I don't know if you're really one to judge me, Case, because I know you said you liked Star Trek V once.
That hurt. That was confidential. That was actually a confidential conversation. Okay. I can't believe you did that. Wow.
Okay. Wow. Well, this is Ask an Atheist.
Rough and tumble opening.
253-584-1480. We are coming to you live from Lakewood, Washington. I'm Mike Gillis, and joining me this week is Case, the fan of Star Trek V.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
And our good friend, Rich Lyons. How are you doing, Rich?
I've never seen Star Trek V.
You know, I will say this. You were in a church for many years
yes.
that did not allow you to enjoy media.
I went 20 years without seeing a movie, 20 years without listening to non-religious music, 20 years without watching a television show.
So I will say that there is a silver lining to that sort of oppression, and it's that you missed Star Trek V. You were spared that. Oh, so... happy to have you guys here today. We're going to go right into everyone's favorite new segment. Scripture Says What?
This is a good one.
Yeah, Scripture Says What? This is our weekly look at our holy books. Those books that people all say that are paragons of truth. Things that people say are this place they go to for wisdom and don't actually read. They tend to treat them like software license agreements where they just go, scroll to the bottom, click, I agree.
I accept. Yes.
So we're going to look
at... That's my personal savior.
That's my personal savior. Yes. Thank you, Apple. Yes, we're going to look at the funny, the scary, and the just plain weird. So our latest one we got is actually from Judges 1:19. Here's a famous one. The Lord was with the men of Judah. They took possession of the hill country, but they were unable to drive the people from the place because they had iron chariots.
Ugh. Omnipotence out the window. Yes. Not with iron chariots.
Yeah, it's like God is all-powerful. He can destroy the world. He can do all of these great... until you get a chariot made of iron.
Yep.
Is it the substance of iron, or does it have to be an iron chariot specifically?
Yeah, if it had been an iron... an ironing board, for instance. He'd have just wiped them out, dude. But it's a chariot of iron. Yeah.
That's what I love, is that essentially iron, specifically in chariot form, seems to be God's kryptonite.
There's our comic book reference for the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it catches me because it seems kind of like this actually does match up with Superman a bit. If you read the original Superman comics, yeah, he could take a shell from a tank. He could leap over a building, couldn't fly, but over time, God is the same way. Starts out as this sort of tribal deity. It's sort of this weird divine version of my brother can beat up your brother, and that if you beat another guy in a battle, that meant your God was stronger than his. But after a while, God became the God of everything, and those other ones were just fictional.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, the transformation here from a God who can't whip someone who has chariots made of iron
to someone who can bend reality?
Yeah, and totally, you know, change the whole world. And you hear of the angels come down and destroyed tens of thousands in different places. But, boy, they're lucky that they didn't have iron chariots.
So, Rich, you were a preacher for years. I mean, how did you handle passages like this? How did you try to
spin? Ignored them.
There's honesty.
I read the Bible cover to cover 13 times, in addition to studying it up to 20 hours a week. And there were plenty of things like that. And we had a phrase. We would say, I believe the whole Bible. I don't understand the whole Bible, but I believe the whole Bible.
So you defer to mysterious ways and those little outs, yeah.
That if it didn't make sense, it was just over your pay grade?
That's it. You just didn't get it.
Yep.
Oh, fun stuff. So if you'd like to send us a piece of scripture, whether it's from the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, maybe perhaps even the divine principle of the Unification Church or Dianetics.
Oh, I was going to mention Dianetics, yes.
Yeah, pick your poison. Send it to us. Right. Go to our website, askanatheist.tv. Hit the big red candy-like shiny button and send it our way. Let us know what book it's from. Give us passage and verse. We'll look it up, make sure it's real, and hey, it might even appear on our show.
I've got to find my Quran. I've got one that we'll use in weeks to come. I know you're going to love it, but I got to find my Quran and get the references right.
there is some fun stuff in there. Yeah, we're going to go right into emails. We've got one from Eric from Everett. I don't know if you know this, but Eric is actually my cousin.
Ah,
he used to join us at a lot of our after-show things when we used to go to the Ram when we were in North Seattle. I know you're farther away, Eric, but please come join us after a show sometime.
Hello, Eric, and thanks for joining us via email.
So Eric asked this. He says, the last episode, the Ask an Atheist crew focused on the topic of what agnosticism is. My brother is an agnostic. He states there is insufficient data to determine the existence or non-existence of gods. Therefore, the answer is, I do not know. Since there is so little impact that we cannot tell the answer, the question becomes pointless and the theist atheist becomes pointless distinctions. Effectively, he holds a position that he does not know, and neither do you. The theist-atheist access becomes trivial. As an atheist, I find the lack of evidence for gods to indicate that there are none. So what do you guys think?
I agree with that. It's easy enough to look for evidence. I mean, if you've got this incredible God that does all these incredible things, you could find evidence that he exists. It would be very simple to find. Some sort of proof that God exists. For instance, Texas has been going through an epic proportion drought all this summer long. The political leaders have called for prayer. They even hosted this prayer rally where 30,000 people come, and part of what they were praying for is rain. I also noticed this week there's a news story where they are doing a new type of development system, and coming up this time next year, they will go online with the nation's first water system that recycles water from the potty to the tap.
Okay.
So how's that prayer thing working out for you? You can call that evidence if you want to. And I say the evidence is pretty much that nobody's listening to the 30,000 voices that united at, what, Reliant Stadium for
the response.
The response. The response to the response is been deafeningly quiet.
Yes, it's been nil. I find really compelling, very interesting about that is that we've never heard any pastors say anything to the effect of, why is God so angry with Texas? You know, typically when something goes wrong,
right,
that's God's wrath towards lesbians or, you know, anything. You know, if something bad had happened to New York, say there was an earthquake right about now,
yeah,
well, that would have been clearly because of the whole gay unions,
right,
you know, the marriages. But so strangely, we find that people are actually very quiet about the notion of Texas being punished for anything.
God knows there's no gays there. So.
it's funny because in this sort of mentality, this theology sort of paints God like a terrorist, that I'm going to hurt innocent people until you change your political views on some issue. That's really, I mean, so you're just going to basically dry out everyone's access to water because of one political idea? That, I mean, when you have an unlimited effects budget and you could just go, boop, kill one dude with a thought, Why aim so wide?
I gave you free will. Now do what I say.
Exactly.
on the thing of evidence, I, as a preacher for 20 years, never saw enough evidence. Now, I believed, but when I actually backed up and said, is there evidence for what I believe? I don't see any evidence. Now, you're right. I can't know that there's no God, but just as a Christian can't know that there is, at some point they say the evidence makes them a believer. At where I am today, my evidence makes me a non-believer.
This falls well under the purview of the whole celestial teapot idea, which is, you know, if I said to you that there was a teapot up in the sky that no one can see, it's invisible, you can't find it with a telescope, but I'm telling you that this book says that there's a celestial teapot up there, therefore you should believe in it, there's just about as much evidence for that. So can you really base your whole life around something that no one can prove? And you know, the hooks for Christianity always start out very small. They always start out with, you know, it's just about love, he loves you, he just wants you to go to heaven, but it gets incrementally more more insidious as time goes on. Well, if you really believe, you start tithing, and if you really believe, you start going to church, and you start dressing this way or acting this way, and it just gets incrementally harder.
It sounds to me like the whole thing is just like Mike was saying a minute ago. It starts out with God back then couldn't tear down a chariot of iron, and then later he has all these magnificent powers. Sounds like the church kind of does the same thing. It all starts with just one thing. God wants to save you, and God loves you, but it just keeps growing and growing and growing.
Until it grows up all around you.
It's somewhat cult-like, by the way, but we'll get on to that. Well, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, the thing that I kind of noticed, too, is I don't think that I do not know and I do not believe have to be mutually exclusive, and it seems like only with the question of God and religion do we even make this distinction. I think that, for instance, nobody ever says, do I believe in Bigfoot? Well, I can't prove with 100% certainty that Bigfoot doesn't exist. Therefore, I'm 50-50 on Bigfoot. Nobody has to come up with this gray area
right
for anything else. So, again, you're listening to Ask an Atheist. Our phone number, 253-584-1480. And we are talking a bit about what is an atheist, what is an agnostic. Do these things have to be mutually exclusive?
You know, I can see an agnostic atheist. You know, I can see that. I know that there are agnostic Christians. A lot of the people, and this may be headed toward our topic more than we want to go right now, but a lot of the people that I worked with in a church, when they realized that particular church was a cult, because I told them it was, and they left it, a lot of them will still say, I believe in God, but I really don't care. I'm really burned out. I really, you know, he let me into all this stuff and all this bad thing happened, and, you know, I really don't care anymore. So there is such a thing as an agnostic Christian, an agnostic atheist, I think, and different degrees therein.
Yeah, I guess what I would say, Eric, is your brother. I think this is Ryan, my other cousin.
Hi, Ryan.
I'd say that you're both atheists. That if you ask somebody if they believe in a God or not, and you say anything other than yes, then you're an atheist. That doesn't mean necessarily that an atheist is somebody who says with 100% certainty. It just means that, for me, 85 to 95% that there's no evidence for this, that's good enough. I don't need to go the full other route. It's not like Bigfoot or leprechauns are hiding in that last 5%, and if they are, prove it to me.
I've always considered atheism and theism to be a very binary proposition. Either you believe or you don't.
Right.
You know? And just like you said, when it comes to the Christian God question, we always have a lot of play with that. But when I ask a Christian, do you believe in Zeus or Apollo or things like that? Well, no, I don't have any belief in that. Of course not. Well, you don't have any proof that that doesn't exist either.
Right.
You know? You're not agnostic about Zeus. And so I find that those kind of questions tend to flip the whole notion on its head that you have to be... Yeah, you have to be in this gray area.
I think we have two different questions here. The question of, do you believe in God, and can you prove or disprove a God? I think that's two different things. No, I can't prove or disprove God. I don't believe in God. And I don't think those two positions conflict with one another.
Yeah, I think the agnosticism, for me at least, leads to my atheism, that I don't want to believe in something if I don't have sufficient evidence. We have another one. This is Chris from the magical wonderland that is the internet, talking a bit about what he calls the atheist-theist scale. I'd measured in terms of confidence, with zero as the middle, stated in percentage terms. On one side, you have more theist people giving confidence in the existence of a god. On the other side, you have confidence of the non-existence of a god. This will take into account strong atheists in the measurement and agnostic in the middle. What do you guys think?
I'm not sure that agnostic is the middle ground there. I think an agnostic is a different thing from a Christian or an atheist, or theist or atheist. I think that one side you could have your theist, one side your non-theist or your atheist, and I think agnosticism is, again, that different question.
Yeah, I think agnosticism is kind of that measure of how much do you know about it and how much can you know about it. And so do you have a strong degree of confidence in something? Then, okay, either you're an atheist or not. You know, I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion about it. You like?
I'd say that I tend to treat it with the same question. The one I always throw out there is the president secretly a robot. I can't get you to 100% knowledge that he's not, but I think the question is so ludicrous and the evidence for it is so poor that I feel pretty good saying, you know what? I don't think the president's a robot. I have no problem saying no to that. It's not like I have to come up with this magical middle ground so that I sound reasonable. I mean,
you got a point. The bigger, in other words, I guess what you're saying, the bigger the question.
The claim.
Is the the bigger the claim. Thank you.
Yes.
I was looking for that.
Yep.
The bigger the claim, the bigger the evidence needs
yes.
to be. If you're going to say the president is a robot, you better have something to back that up.
Right.
If you don't, you're just a whack.
The burden of proof lies on the claimant, and that's the, you know, that's the way the formula should always be. So if someone says, I think the president is a robot, where's the proof? The answer isn't you have to disprove it. No, the burden of proof is on the claimant.
Right.
So that's how that should go.
Yeah, a lot of religious people do throw at us, you know, hey, you've got to prove that it's not.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it just doesn't work that way because you have to play that same game with everything else, including other people's religions. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. We're going to take a quick break. We are coming to you live. Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We will hear you in a couple minutes.
have one sad kayak. Oh, it floats all right. But while other kayaks cavort in Sunny Lake, Washington as part of Puget Sound Blood Center's Swim for Life, yours will be sitting in the garage all alone gathering dust. The year's biggest event for recreational kayakers, leading swimmers across the lake to a beachside finish party, and is free for kayakers. Think about it. PSBC.org/swimforlife.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
And we are back. You are listening to Ask an Atheist. This is 253-584-1480. And we're going to talk a bit about getting caught up in those kooky little groups we like to call cults. And we're going to kick this off by talking about something that just happened this past week. This is a news story we have. Basically, it says attendees at a nationalist right-wing concert in Germany were duped into wearing souvenir T-shirts that at first bore a pro-nationalist stance and symbology, but later revealed anti-far-right messages offering assistance after they had been washed. So basically, this is like a neo-Nazi group putting on a concert, and it had this sort of disappearing ink of some kind on these T-shirts that they thought they had these pro-nationalist, kind of Nazi-esque, you know, white supremacist-type logos and slogans with skulls and flags, and it looks like biker font. And the minute they took them home and washed them, the new T-shirt wiped off most of the white paint and left a message that said, "If your T-shirt can do it, so can you. We'll help you get away from right-wing extremism." So it's kind of interesting, too, because we're addressing this kind of like a cult. And I guess the first question is, what is a cult?
You know, that question has a lot of answers. And I think it's a lot like what we've already discussed here about atheism, agnostic theism. There's not a straight line that you can just go to and say anything on the other side of this is a cult. We've got a list that has several things that cults tend to do. And again, we do want to say, we understand cult is not a politically correct term right now, that a lot of specialists are no longer using the word cult, but they're using, I think, what, destructive groups, things of that nature.
Right.
We're going to use the cult because it's...
It's a good shorthand for what we want to say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And going with that, but there are tendencies, there are things that make a group cult-like. And whether you cross that line and say it's cult... that's going to be everybody's individual determination, just like the degree of theism versus atheism.
You know, it's funny. Most people probably aren't in a cult, but people who are in a cult don't think they're in a cult for sure.
Exactly.
You know, it's one of those things. Like, so most people listening to this probably won't say to themselves, "I'm in a cult. I see these red flags. I know someone else who is." That's probably one of the ironies of the topic that we're going to do is probably most people won't even see the situations that we're talking about. They'll use cognitive dissonance and kind of not see what we're talking about in themselves or the behavior of their social group. But
I specifically would have denied that I was in a cult and defended that cult. And then now I can look back and tell you that it is a cult because when you're in it, you can't recognize it.
Right.
You're not allowed to question. There's no way that you can come to a place that you realize. And if you do, you're in a dangerous place.
So both of you guys describe yourselves as having been in a cult. And Rich, you were even a cult leader. So yeah. I would ask both of you, what are the qualities of being in a cult? What makes something cultish?
Probably the first thing I could think of is deception. Their message is layered in kind of this it's layered in. At first, it's very, very easy to become a member. You just either come to a meeting, meet some folks. You know, in the case of Christianity, it's just accept the Lord. You know, say this one thing that I think it's you accept the Lord Jesus Christ, your personal Savior, and that's all you have to do. But really, it becomes much more after that. That if you truly accept Him, then you'll come to church meetings, and you'll start tithing to church, and you'll start volunteering in events. You'll start participating in other ways, and it snowballs from there.
The particular group I was in, we had what we called seeker services and seeker activities that were geared for those people who are not inside. And in those things, everything was the whole, we didn't show the whole message. We didn't tell the whole thing that you were going to have to do going in. It was just where we would do outreach. We would cook fish. We had some men that would load a boat down with catfish, and we would fry catfish, and everybody would just come. And all you have to do is come eat fish. We're just friendly, and you're friendly, and boy, it's great to get to know you. But as you came in, there were multiple layers. There were those people on the outside. Then you've got a circle, and inside that circle is your first layer of people who are kind of being drawn in. And then an inner circle where more is acquired, and it keeps getting to smaller circles within circles. And the tiniest circle was the ministry. And, you just kind of draw people towards the middle of everything. So I agree. The first thing is deception. They're not going to tell you up front what's going to be required of you.
Let's see. Another one would be another characteristic that I had seen was this us versus them mentality, that once you got into it, you had to be careful of the world, things that were worldly.
Yeah.
And worldly is, and I know you
that's
know that word.
Word.
That's a code word. That's a code word for anyone that's not us. And worldly right. is, that's where that's the world that Satan controls. That's anything that from pop culture to movies, music.
To other churches.
Other churches. All these things are worldly. In fact, I remember one of the things they had said in this church that I was in was that that there was a coven of witches who are attacking the church actively. And we have to actually be aware of the fact that they were trying to cast spells on various members to get them out.
Did they actually name names, or are they just this invisible, intangible group?
It was just, the imagery was that somewhere out in the woods, circle around right. the church, that there was some coven out there that we had to be aware of. That was
That's kind of funny, because that sounds like a lot of games that people play when they're kids, and they're saying, oh, those are the haunted woods, there's murderers out there. So they never actually said, this is the group we're afraid of. They're just sort of this group that's out there somewhere. They're intangible, sort of like the way they treat Satan.
Yeah, much like that. And the idea that, and they use a lot of fear and intimidation right. as well. You cannot, questioning authority was considered to be something a demon was trying to influence you
right.
to question authority. No, God has already laid out a plan for you, and these are our leaders, and these are, in the church they had apostles and prophets and just all these, various chess pieces from the Bible.
Ministry, yes.
Yeah. All these various chess pieces, the rook and the bishop and all these things that you wouldn't think happen in modern times, but anyway. And they'd come visit the church and prophesy over people, and to question that would be against, you'd be on the wrong side of spiritual warfare.
So, Rich, I have to ask, you were actually a pastor of a Pentecostal church
right.
that you label as a cult now.
Yes.
Was a lot of this stuff intentional? Was it something that you knew you were doing, that you were trying to scare people away from the world? Or,
Looking back, I was not a bad guy. I was a cult leader. I was not a bad guy. And that may seem like two totally different things that I'm saying here, but at no time did I intentionally harm or intentionally mislead anyone. I believed the things that I taught. I believed the things that I told people. There were times that you manipulated people for their own good. And when you put yourself in that position, here you are, the mouthpiece of God, and the purpose is to get these people to heaven. And it's an eternally important question. You're either going to spend eternity in hellfire burning forever and ever and ever, and that's a bad place to be, or you're going to be in this eternal bliss forever and ever and ever, and there's no turning back once you get there. Whatever means it takes to get someone to do the right thing to get there is really a good thing, right?
Sounds kind of Machiavellian.
It's kind of freaky. I mean, when I look back on it, it makes no sense whatsoever. But at the time, it made perfect logic, and it was a beautiful way to help people who didn't even know they needed to be helped.
So, separating yourself from the world in that us versus them sort of mentality?
Us versus them mentality. And us, you have to be totally dedicated to us. As Case said, no questioning of authority whatsoever. Another thing I would like to say is a measure of how much cult-like activity is going on is, to what degree do they control people? I mean, in the group I was in, and the churches in that organization were autonomous. Some churches, literally, if you wanted to buy a new car, you had to go to the preacher, ask him if he thought that was a good idea, show him the cars you're looking at, and he would make the decision for you.
Wow. About which car to buy?
Yes.
Wow.
And when I was a pastor, a person comes to me and says, I want to buy a new car, why don't you go? I said, look, dude, I drive a 1975 Corvette. If you can do better than that, get it. I mean, if you can make a better choice than that, it's 8 miles to a gallon. I mean,
I can understand the need to have that kind of level of control over the people underneath you, because if you can control that, you can control every aspect of their life. But, I mean, why? What standard would you judge a car?
I didn't do it. Well, I wasn't, but I know that there were those that did. And so many areas of their life had so much control in the church, and that's, the church became the preeminent thing, and the pastor was the center of that. The pastor was the voice of God. So everything, every aspect of their life eventually became controlled by the church and thus by the pastor. And the pastor could take to whatever degree he wanted to on that, even to the degree of telling people not to take a new job, not to move to a nearby city. I mean, and when you think about it, the pastor gets those tithes. There can be some pretty strong motivation not to let someone who pays good tithes leave.
Let's talk a little bit about love bombing and its opposite, shunning.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you first enter a church, just like you said, here's some fish, let's all talk, I want to learn a little bit about you. And as you get to be more acclimated in the church, you find yourself with lots of instant friends, folks who just want to know more about you and spend time with you. And the exact opposite of that is obviously shunning,
yes.
Which is when you find yourself outside the good graces of the church, this is one of the means in which cults use to control their members is that you will lose your family. You will lose your friends if they're all part of this group. And there's that fear of being outside of a social group. And that is a very human thing. To want to be accepted and loved and have friends.
Exactly.
And that's a powerful motivator.
So when you guys walked away from this, what was that experience like? I mean, Case, what did you lose when you walked away?
Well, first, I guess I should talk about my journey to walking away. And that was the church that I was in believed in the five gifts of the Holy Spirit. And that was speaking in tongues, prophecy. There's a few more. They escape me now, but really the salient one there is speaking in tongues. We had a pastor who would, in fact, many of the pastors did this. They all spoke in tongues, and they would translate what they said after what they said. And I got into the habit of starting to record the speaking in tongues. I just found the whole phenomenon that they're speaking some other language that they've never learned before to be fascinating. So what I had done was I'd actually started to collect it, and at some point, I don't know how I got it in my head, but I said, let me just see if what he says translates at another time. So I played back a tape, and I said to the pastor that I missed the translation on this, and I said, can you tell me what the translation is for this? And his translation didn't match what was on the rest of the tape. And for me, that started this idea of maybe this is all nonsense. Maybe they are lying. So anyway, the more I questioned it, and I had more stories about that, the more I questioned it, the more I found myself less welcome, incrementally less welcome. My friends, they'll consider about me backsliding. That's kind of the terms that they use for you when you're not in alignment with the church. And they had kind of interventions where they all got together and tried to stop me from leaving and debating me for hours before to stop me from going out. So anyway, I found myself outside the graces of the church within short order.
And is there ever a point where you get to a hard line where you do not come back? I mean, did you have that moment, or did you leave before that happened, Case?
I think I just left before it happened. I found myself wanting to seek the information from other people. I mean, at the time, there were no atheist books on bookshelves. I didn't know anybody who was atheist. I didn't know anybody who was an atheist at all. So I remember finding a radio person who was atheist. I don't even know how I got his phone number, but I called this guy in another state and asked him. Well, the first question I asked him was, how come you're not afraid of going to hell? You know, how can you do that? And so anyway, that started me on my journey of really questioning Christianity and faith in general.
When I left, it was a process where I began to realize that a lot of the teachings of the group didn't add up to what the Bible said was true. And I began to realize that a lot of the scriptures that they used It's funny because one of the preachers actually, in something I had said, brought to my attention. He said, that is based on circular logic. And I said, what do you mean circular logic? And he explained circular logic to me. And that was the downfall of me. Once I realized what circular logic was, I began to talk to people and ask them, you know, things. And I would teach things. And then I would listen to the backing for what I was teaching. I said, I don't really say that. So I began to study things out and realized that a lot of the things I was teaching and that our church believed really weren't what the Bible said. And at that point, I still believed in the Bible. But I began to change those things. And as I did, it caused a huge rift in the church. Half the church, actually, eventually, 80% of the church agreed with me that this stuff was bull. The other half, or the other 20%, which happened, unfortunately, to be my family, refused to let go. And I was actually called into a family meeting where I sat there and listened to the family, and they talked as though I wasn't there, although they knew I was, about how, you know, Rich has gone astray. Rich no longer sees the truth. He no longer preaches the truth. And we as his family need to bring him back. And if we can't, we must destroy him.
Wow.
And they absolutely did do that, or their best effort at it. So, yeah, it was quite intense. And leaving that left me in a state of hard to describe. I mean, I was absolutely all I could do is take my daughter to school in the morning, go back, sit in a dark room. When it was time to pick her up in the afternoon. I mean, that's all I could accomplish. I was just
a perfect example of God's infinite love and mercy, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it seems kind of like even the leader of a cult can kind of be destroyed by the flock, or was it somebody going over your head to another leadership body?
Went over my head. They went to the presbytery of the church, which is over the head of the local ministry, and they had asked that I resign at that point, or someone from the church was going to ask that I resign. And I agreed that it was probably the right thing to do, because the charges they accused me of when they told me on the phone they were going to ask me to resign is that I no longer believe the standards of holiness, which meant that women can't cut their hair, women can't wear makeup, women can't wear pants, they have to wear dresses, all this list of things. And I didn't, and I was open about that. So, yeah, it was time for me to resign. But once you have resigned, there is a, as Case mentioned, shunning that just totally brings your life to an end. And there is no life outside the cult. And that's one of the things, you know, you're in a cult when you can't imagine life without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you are listening to Ask an Atheist. We're talking about cults. You can give us a call. Our phone number is 253-584-1480. And that's kind of an interesting thing, where there seems to be even a structure, because as afraid as they would be of Case, because they have that sort of spoiled apple, you know, ruins the barrel sort of mentality about it, that they don't want that new idea getting in there, you'd think they'd even be more afraid of somebody who has that sort of influence as a leader. So, I mean, was there a hard break at one point?
A hard break from the church?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Very hard break. I was officially excommunicated for wearing a gold chain, which they taught that jewelry was a sin, wearing chains and such was a sin. But when I resigned based on, I didn't even let them present the charge. I mean, the presbyter said, they're going to make the case that you no longer believe the standards of holiness and ask you to resign. I thought, I'll save him the trouble, I'll just resign. And I did.
Kind of a Richard Nixon sort of decision.
Well, I mean, there was no point in arguing it. I'd been preaching for the last 6-8 months that the things the church preached were wrong. So there was no reason to try to debate that at that point. What things kind of changed in that before I had even officially resigned, the presbyter spread the word through the organization, through the Chaplains Association I was a member of in the town, through the Ministerial Alliance there, that someone from my church was going to present evidence that I'd had an affair with a woman. And rather than defend myself, resigned, which is totally not what happened. But that way, you're destroyed, because you can't minister again. Adultery is the death knell to ministering again. So at that point, you're done.
You get banished to that big mirror in space, and it spins around through eternity. That
right, yeah.
It sounds like they don't even want to take the risk that you might become a pastor somewhere else.
Exactly. You are done. You're finished. In a small town, blackballed to the degree that, I mean, I even tried to go to other churches and had the pastor pull me out aside and say, hey, look, we heard what happened. We're real sorry about that, but we really don't want that coming here either.
Wow.
So, yeah, you are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we're talking a bit about cults. So, you were talking a bit about this us versus them mentality. How does a cult talk about the outside world and people outside of the group?
The world.
Yeah, secular, worldly. In the context of spiritual warfare, everything is part of this larger context of us versus Satan. Us meaning if you're inside the church, us versus Satan, and that Satan will use his wiles to kind of influence you. I remember hearing these long diatribes about the evils of Madonna. This was back in the 80s, just in the 90s rather. Just these evils about Madonna and how she's wicked and how she's trying to pull you away from the church, and her music always has this subtext. And they have these videos like. You ever hear the backmasking controversy, mm-hmm. that songs have this hinted meaning backwards? And so you hear videos like that. This proves that Satan's influence is going through bands, and he's using backmasking and backwards songs to try to pull you away from the church.
Go ahead. It's pretty amazing, though. So what kind of stuff were you guys told that you were supposed to stay away from? What was evil? Was it anything secular? Or?
In my case, everything. I even quit a job where I was a disc jockey on the radio playing country music because country music was evil, and had to quit that job and go to a different job because you couldn't be associated with it. So obviously you can't listen to country music. I mean, you couldn't listen to country music or any non-Christian music. You couldn't go to movies, couldn't watch television. You weren't supposed to read secular magazines. You could read news magazines, but they really had a tight control on what you could put into your brain. And they would any activity, they would call it a worldly activity. In our case, you couldn't go to football, baseball games, because that's all idolatry.
Yes.
Anything that was any kind of entertainment or any kind of distraction or anything that would just let your mind be on hold for a little bit was absolutely off limits.
One of my favorites is how everyday symbols were considered to be of the devil. One of my favorites is the Statue of Liberty. The Statue mm-hmm. of Liberty is holding up a torch. Well, Satan is Lucifer, and that's also light. So yes. Therefore, the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of Satanism. Just things like that, everyday things that are common are flipped upside down so that you now start to distrust them. So, anyway, interesting angle there.
It's funny because it seems like there's this real war against any sort of outside influence, anything that could possibly be fun that isn't Jesus.
Exactly. I had one of the men in my church actually come to me and say, and his dad was one of the founding fathers of this faith that I was a part of, and he said, I remember one of the last things my dad said. He looked at me and he said, boy, what is fun? Because his theory was there was no such thing. All that mattered is making it to heaven, and anything that distracts you even for a moment is potentially eternity in hell.
So we're going to go to a quick break, and I know, Rich, you weren't allowed to watch movies for 20-something years.
20 years.
And you're just seeing a lot of these for the first time, movies that everybody has seen.
Yeah.
So I'd like to throw this out to you, if you're listening. If you think of a movie that has come out in the last, what was it, 25 years?
Yeah, 25.
Pretty something much good, something fun.
Yeah.
Rich has a huge hole in his pop culture experience. And I want you to plug Rich's hole.
A lot of cherries to pop, indeed.
So this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and take some of your phone calls.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
And we are back. You are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go right to the phone lines. We have on line two, Ed from Portland. Ed, welcome to Ask an Atheist.
Ed, what do you have for us?
You know, one of my best movies is Contact. If you haven't seen Contact with Jodie Foster first, you really ought to see that.
I actually have seen Contact. That one was someone recommended that at one of our atheist get-togethers, and we Netflixed it. So thank you.
Oh, good for you. I was going to ask you guys, what do you think about the Rick Perry, you know, who is now running for president? He's supported by a real right-wing extreme apostolic group that are end of, you know, timers and so on. They say Oprah Winfrey is depicted as a terrible, terrible person, although she's well-intentioned. She's, you know, doing the work of the devil. What do you guys think about all? I mean, it seems to me that this sort of gives personification what you all are talking about.
You know, I was in Texas for most of my life, 43 years there, and was there when George Bush left and Rick Perry came in. So I have a bit of a perspective on this.
Cool.
Rick Perry is he's playing it for all he's worth. But also, we in Texas referred to him as the dumb one. And I'm not making this up, as compared to George W. Bush.
Wow.
So if you want to really understand where this is, George W. Bush was the smart one.
Yeah, I find it kind of interesting, too, that this is a guy who's very clearly trying to run for, I guess, pastor-in-chief. I mean, right before he runs for office, he sets himself up to basically just drown himself in Jesus-related platitudes.
Yeah.
And then immediately goes for it. He's the same guy who's putting all of these fundamentalist, young earth creationist on the Board of Education, trying to change social studies stuff to put a lot of pseudo-history in there. He is pushing really hard. At least, I don't know if this is new to him, but this is something he's pushing really hard to align himself with the religious right, and it could be that this is just something cynical to shoot for higher office with.
It sure is scary, though.
I think that he's probably not doing it so much himself, but that he's being pushed in that direction. I really think that the people handling him are much like the Karl Roves that handled George W. Bush. And I really think that they've decided, you know, Governor Goodhair, it has a pretty face, he's got great hair, he can really motivate a crowd, and if we can move him in this direction, we can get him into office. I really think that's where it's coming from.
I kind of take the perspective that I don't really care if he believes it or not. I just look at the end result, that he could be a complete phony, but if his goal, his method of getting power, even if it's completely cynical, is ruining our science education and getting crap into our textbooks, it's going to be used in multiple states to appease these fundamentalist whack jobs, then I think that's dangerous. And I don't know if he's a true believer in the sense that I think that, say, Michelle Bachmann is a true believer, that she can't help but spit the hellfire brimstone, you know, kind of dominionist sort of attitude out there as far as politicians go. But I think Rick Perry, as far as a religious politician, is a bit more dangerous because he knows how to keep it under his hat a little bit more. Maybe that's just a symptom of being a phony. I don't know if that's the best thing you can say about somebody, that they're probably a liar.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think he's more dangerous than Michelle Bachmann, because I think by the time Michelle Bachmann hits mainstream America, she's going to get shot down. Perry could run in mainstream.
I think so, too. I think he's actually pretty dangerous in terms of the kind of support he has. As you've pointed out, he was part of that response That was his event. That was his event. So yeah, he's totally aiming for pastor in chief, and to me that makes him very, very dangerous. I don't want that kind of president. I really don't.
It seems like he'd be a slightly more dangerous Pat Robertson type, and Pat Robertson's not dangerous because also, like a true believer, the guy can't keep it under his hat. He doesn't know how to talk to a mixed audience, and I think that's the thing that made somebody like, say, Mike Huckabee a dangerous politician as far as being a religious right person, because he's got Pat Robertson style politics where it is all about kind of creating this theocratic state. Yet, he knows how to go on, say, like The Daily Show, a show that has an audience that isn't really going to be in his pocket, and he can get them to laugh at his sort of self-effacing jokes, and he comes across as somewhat charming. I don't think that Rick Perry has quite the Huckabee charm, but I think he's still in the same sort of area, that there's kind of like, there's fundamentalist preachers that know how to hide their crazy a little bit better than others, and there's other ones that just can't help but just start spitting venom and just insane nonsense in every direction. You got the Wiley Drakes on one hand, and the Rick Warrens who know how to talk to your grandma on the other hand.
Yeah. I think the hide your crazy, that's kind of what we were talking about, the Seeker Service. That's why we had those. We would hide our crazy at the Seeker Service and then get crazy on Sunday night. So, yeah, Perry might be able to play to both crowds, though. He might be able to have the Seeker Service and the crazy.
Hey, good show, guys.
All right. Thank you,
thanks for calling.
And on the other line, we have our good friend, Chad. Chad, welcome back to Ask an Atheist.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Chad.
What have you got for us?
Well, I don't have any pop culture suggestions for Rich there, because I'm kind of in the same boat.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, and you guys were talking about the separationist us versus them mentality a few minutes ago, and I was just really vibing with it. So I was wondering if I could bring things back to that for a second.
Yes, sure. Please do.
Rock on. I have a lot of experiences with that as well, right? I'd say that takes about 20% of the rhetoric in the meetings and sometimes in the watchtower and whatnot. You know, moderating your association with the outside world as much as possible.
So, how did they try to scare you about the outside world, Chad?
Well, it's really the same stuff. I mean, you guys were listing it out. It's dangerous. It will keep your faith. It's really, there's an illusion of safety that's going on there. I think the other purpose of it, though, the real purpose is if you are able to catch a glimpse of what that looks like to the real world, that's going to erode your faith.
Let me ask you a personal question, Chad. Do you still find yourself struggling with that indoctrination, that programming? Like, do you still find yourself worrying that there may be a hint of it that's true?
No? But I tackled it. I mean, deconversion is a violent process, and it's also a really violent process when you have all of the external social group losses, along with it. There's a lot of punishments to abandoning that way of thinking.
Right.
And
I'm glad you said that.
So nowadays, right, you know, everybody's not, whenever I see it, the seclusionism, it creeps me the bleep out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm on the radio here. But even stuff like, you know, the Christian side hug video.
Yes.
When I see little bits of pop culture that are specifically Christian or specifically anything, it's really just a reminder that while these people think that there needs to be a religious or safe alternative to universally human things like music or dancing
or hugging,
or sitting together and having fun or hugging.
Yeah,
there needs to be an alternative so that we can have our own, so that we never have to deal with the real world. And as you guys were pointing out, it is dangerous. I mean, the witnesses are pacifists, but there are many sects and cults that are not. And, brainwashing people like that just makes them... everybody's basically good, I think. I mean, if you have all the information available to you, you're not going to be a jerk.
Rich and I were talking about this very subject a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we there was this video where I saw about faith healing that was on the Oprah Network. And they showed people being slain in the spirit. And you know what that is, Rich, where, right. Where they have the altar call, people get prayed upon. They get prayed upon in such a way that they fall to the ground and writhe around a lot. And you and I said the same thing. It's like watching burn victims. It really is, because you know that if any of them ever dare question that what had happened, or their pastor, that the shunning would begin, and that right. You feel like you're being burned. You know,
it's, and you have to do it. It's heavy. Yeah.
It's quite heavy.
You have to, it's really, really tough. So whenever I see people like that, I have nothing but sympathy for them.
Right.
Nothing but sympathy, because I know that if they ever try to get out, that they have a long, painful road ahead of them.
The people in the cult are not the bad ones. Sometimes the leader of the cult's not the bad one. Sometimes it is a system that has been set up based on beliefs and teachings and deceptions and beliefs and teachings and deceptions, and it snowballed into something it was never intended to be. And now here is this great horrific thing, and everybody involved is deceived from the top down to the bottom.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, that, I mean, there's got to be at least somebody who gets there, at least when it was originally put, these ideas and systems were originally set forward, there was somebody who gets it, because that's a huge income stream, everybody buying things so thoroughly protecting them from like I was mentioning, the actual information of how people really see this and how ridiculous it truly is. Because the second they get a glimpse of how ridiculous this seclusionism is and how dangerous it is, that income stream is going to dry up real quickly.
I have no doubt that L. Ron Hubbard knew exactly what he was making.
Yeah, there's nothing more dangerous than an outside idea. It's essentially the same thing we're talking about the kid pointing out the emperor has no clothes.
Right.
There's nothing more dangerous than that. Thank you a lot for your call, Chad.
Thanks, Chad.
Yeah, take it easy, guys.
You too.
And if you want to give us a call, our phone number is 253-584-1480. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. We just got an email from Blake. He says, I just tuned in. What was the cult that you were a part of? And regarding Hide Your Crazy, is this discussed, or is it like newbies are coming, so play it cool so they don't run for the hills?
Hide Your Crazy is a new phrase that we just came up with here. But yes, I was United Pentecostal Church, and I Googled the other night, just in case someone said, how can you call them a cult? I Googled the other night just UPCI, which is United Pentecostal Church International, and the word cult came up with 16,000 hits. So I'm not the only one out here saying it. But and they even have their official platform piece of what to say when people say we are a cult. And the answer for that is, must you resort to name-calling? We find that when people can't argue with our truth, they resort to calling us names. And we hate that you've fallen into that position. And that was written by David K. Bernard. So
I've got to see that.
It's lovely piece of work.
Bit funny, because that reminds me of every time you mention to somebody who's deep into Amway that they're a pyramid scheme, they get into that same defensive mentality. So how about you, Case? What were you entrenched in?
Mine was Assemblies of God. And they believed in the, like I said, the gifts of the Holy Spirit, that that gifts were bestowed upon certain believers, and those certain believers used their gifts to enrich the church. One of my favorites was that almost all afflictions were caused by demons. So if you were depressed, you had problems with your liver, if you had jealousy or lust, then every Thursday night you summed in a large circle and you prayed to have all the demons cast out of you. So
sounds a little bit like Operating Thetan level.
Oh yeah, the Scientology reference for the win there.
Yeah, the idea that there's somehow some kind of a parasite, a sort of demonic parasite attached to you, creating all your sadness.
Yeah.
That you always, no matter what the thing is, you got to tie it back into religion. So here's the thing: I know that you guys are
on the second part of his question. I would like to go kind of into detail on that, if I would. Hate to interrupt, but what he said there is the hiding your crazy part. We had a very elaborate setup of how we would bring people in, and we did not tell them things intentionally. We weren't going to tell you that you're wearing facial hair and that's of the devil. But, you know, we weren't going to tell you that until you reached a certain place in your, quote, relationship with God. We had a very elaborate system.
Very structured. Yep.
Yes. We were very careful to hide our crazy. Now, hide our crazy is a phrase I'm using here, but we knew exactly how far we could push people as they came along and were very careful not to. And there was a point, and we actually use this terminology, once we set the hook, then you could begin to reel them in. But as long as they're just playing with the bait, you've got to coddle them along. And that is actual, we were fishers of men, and that is actual terminology we use.
So in our last couple minutes before we wrap this thing up, we're talking about, how do you even find that person? What do you look for in a person that, if you're a cult, how do you bring them in? What kind of, I guess you could say, sap did you look
for? Someone who's broken. just divorced, lost a parent, lost a spouse, lost a job,
death of a parent,
drug addict, alcoholic.
They're away from home, college kids.
Yes.
People who are just lonely in general or depressed, maybe just lost their job, just people who are vulnerable at whatever stage of their life for whatever reason.
Oh. Anyone who's at a point that they should be taking an antidepressant is ripe for a cult to hit.
Right.
Anyone who needs to see a psychologist, a cult is ready for.
Right. And cult is cultivate. I mean, that comes from the cultivate. So it's a perfect word for exactly what it does.
So, yes, you're listening to Ask an Atheist. 5-4. Let's not take any more phone calls. We don't have any time for that. It seems like what we're really looking at here is somebody who's vulnerable, somebody who's hurting, somebody who has a problem that you can immediately make up a reason for.
And the beautiful thing, not only make up a reason, as Case mentioned before, you love bomb them. Everybody in the church all of a sudden loves this
so
guy.
Excited.
Everybody is so excited. Right. We are so glad you're here.
Everyone wants to know your story. Yeah. Everyone cares about every little detail of your life.
And you know how you go through a horrible time in life, you're going through a divorce, and everybody wants to hear you tell the story. And that is so freeing and liberating to you, and they tell you how great God is, and all of a sudden, because you suddenly are surrounded by people who love you and friends and good people, all of a sudden, the whole concept of that problem begins to go away, because there is some actual therapy going on, but there is a hook in that bait.
But once you bite onto that hook, that's when they tell you that your beard is from the devil and that you have to be bad for watching secular TV.
If you really believe in God, you'll start tithing.
Right.
You'll start behaving in this way. You'll start showing up. You'll start volunteering. And if you're of God, then you'll start behaving in a certain way. And then it just gets more and more insidious after that.
Start with a carrot, end with a stick. So, exactly. Yes, you've been listening to Ask an Atheist. We are going to go away now. Ask an Atheist. My name is Mike Gillis, and joining me this week were Case and Rich Lyons.
Thank you, everyone.
Our production assistants this week, Rebecca Friedman and Sam Mulvey. Call screener is Darren Garvin. Our music is written by Chris Coleman. Ask an Atheist is a production
Post-game show at the office.
Post-game show at the office this week. Join us. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media. If you want to catch us online, go to askanatheist.tv. We will see you next week.
KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma. An attorney for Gary.